You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I do remember having a bag of mushrooms in my refrigerator.
There are still thousands of miles of beaches.
I'm not going to the wedding.
Why not?
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And welcome. Tonight we have Dr. Ron Tarner to talk about the Gulf, the continuing oil leak, the damage to the environment, and what the American people are doing about it and what the American people know about it. In a moment, we'll be talking to Robert Green from Fraser Foods as he and other business people in the community across the country are working to get people interested and motivated to pay a visit to the Gulf this summer, regardless of what problems we may be contending with down there, because you know we're going to get them solved. The BP containment test, though, has been delayed. We're going to talk about that as well. George Steinbrenner has passed on, longtime owner of the New York Yankees. He bought the Yankees sometime in the early 70s, I believe, and bought the Yankees from CBS. CBS owned the Yankees. I know that there was a conversation about the Dodgers being owned by Fox TV for a while. George Steinbrenner bought them and turned them back into the world's champions that they'd always been. He has passed on at the age of 80. Plus, does your office scare you? We're going to tell you the top signs that that you work in a fear-based workplace. 877-876-PHIL. I don't know. I'm laughing about that now.
Yeah, we can't yell at people.
Oh, I don't scare you. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Tonight, our affiliate spotlight on Salt Lake City's KKAT 860 AM. And in Flagstaff, Arizona, KBTK 105.1 FM. A brand new affiliate there in Flagstaff. Glad to be with you guys. And thanks for joining the Phil Hendry Show network. Our website is philhendryshow.com, where right now you can look at live streaming audio or live streaming video of the show and listen to live streaming audio of our show as it's taking place right now. Also, the archives of our show go back 15 years, and we are right now converting those archives into downloadable clips. We are also filling in those archives. The famous missing year of 2001 has been found, and just a lot of very, very exciting stuff and exciting features that we are every day implementing for you there on philhendryshow.com. So check it out, philhendryshow.com, which is really the right arm of our radio show. Joining us from Buena Park, California, is Robert Green. The First Lady was, I believe, speaking today, Bob, and said that people need to vacation in the Gulf. She was doing a pitch.
She was, Bill. She was doing a great pitch for the people in the Southeast. And I got to tell you, I think I heartily concur. I am not, as people might, you know, guess, I'm not a liberal Democrat. I'm a businessman, and I guess in a lot of ways that means that you're bound to be a Republican in some way, especially in California. I'm a conservative, but I really do agree with the First Lady, and I was very grateful to see her do that today, because I think we've got to get people motivated, Phil, to visit the Southeast and to visit the Gulf States and get business back to the Southeast again, get people back enjoying those beautiful beaches down there, enjoying those beautiful keys. The coast of Florida, the beautiful coast of Alabama, Mississippi, and so forth. And to that end, we are doing as much as we can with Fraser Foods here in the Southwest, as well as our stores in the Southeast.
Yeah, you've got some 25 stores throughout the Southwest, the Southeast, as I was mentioning to the audience. How are you motivating people? I mean, it's one thing to come on a radio show, but you've got people coming into your stores every day.
Yeah.
And how are you getting people to to sign up, as it were?
Well, Phil, that's a good question. And what we're doing is we've got giveaways every week of weekend getaways in the Keys, Florida Keys, weekend getaways along the Florida coast. We've got weekend getaways in the along the coast of Louisiana and the Texas and some of the resorts that are down there. You know, I'm not really that familiar with the a lot of the resorts that we're talking about. But we're trying to get people to become excited about the area. And
are you taking a vacation this year?
Yes, I am. I'm going to be taking a vacation, Phil, in August, and I'm taking a couple of weeks off, and that is going to be a good time for our family.
Where are you going?
Well, we are going to go to San Francisco, and let me tell you why we're going to go to San Francisco and not the Gulf. We do want people going to the Gulf. There's no question, but we're going to San Francisco, Phil, because the Bay Area has a hotel. It's opened up there. It's called the Paloma Resort, I think. And it has a mud baths, and it has some things that I like. It's a very expensive resort, though, and I think the great thing about the Gulf is you're not going to find a place like that in the Gulf.
If I'm a business, for instance, Bob, you have you're a man who's moneyed, and I appreciate that. If I want to go to a 4-star, a 5-star resort in the Gulf, where there are, you're right, beautiful beaches, I'm sure that I can avail myself of that there, right?
I'm absolutely sure you can, and you might check with your travel agent. The Gulf has got great, great, beautiful places. You're absolutely right, Phil. I'm going to San Francisco because it's closer to my work, because I could get called back, and I might be needed. But there's bound to be a 4-star resort. If there isn't, here is what I think is the best thing about the Gulf. It's not a place that is going to cost a family man a lot of money. I think it's the best place for most Americans to go because it is a place that is, it's inexpensive. I don't want to make it sound like it's cheap. It's an inexpensive place. To the extent that it's inexpensive, it means that it's a place that people are going to enjoy, I think, a lot more.
Here's what I would say, and I probably shouldn't have asked you where you're going on vacation.
Well, it's not really important where I'm going.
But I would say that you could, or maybe other people in the business community could go to the Gulf. And for instance, do they have a Ritz? Do they have a Four Seasons?
Well, I couldn't answer. You can call a Ritz, you can call a Four Seasons. I don't think of the Gulf Coast when I think of the Ritz or the Four Seasons or one of these boutique hotels. But you can certainly call. I think more of Hawaii and California when you think of that. But no question, Phil, that it's a great place for a family. I don't think a family man's going to want to take his family to the Ritz, though.
All right. So the Ritz, the Four Seasons, these kind of high-end hotels, though, we can look in and call those people and see if they have those kinds of places. But that's really not what we're talking about. We're talking about families.
That's exactly right. We're talking about families going down to the Gulf, and we're talking about getting that business back and enjoying, these things like they have the parasailing, and they have these dinner cruises. And they have a lot of things that you can avail yourself of. So I would, by all means, without question, I would check into that. My trip to San Francisco is really more about it. It's about me and the money that I've got and the need that I have to relax. And the people that I'm talking to right now on your show are, they're going to want to call the hotels in the Gulf.
Well, the ones that are listening to my show right now, if they want to go to a place like a really fancy place like you're going to in San Francisco, what I'm saying is if they want to get business in the Gulf.
I can't promise that. I don't know. I don't know if there's a place like the one that I'm going to in San Francisco.
Yeah.
You talk about the Paloma.
Yeah.
I don't know if there is a place like that. And I don't think that's important. What I think is important is that people go down to the Gulf and do business down there and enjoy themselves if they are people that have the kind of money that I've got. I guess I've got to say that there probably isn't the kind of a hotel that you would like. But it would be nice if you would bite the bullet. And
well, we're not. I don't want it to sound like you're suffering if you go to the Gulf.
Well, I think if we keep talking this way, it's going to sound that way.
All right, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that.
If you're wealthy, if you're poor, it doesn't matter. You can go to the Gulf and enjoy yourself. I'm not going there only because I don't really. I am not a big fan of the South, but that doesn't mean that I don't love the Gulf and don't want it to do well and don't want the people down there to do well. I really do want the people in the South to do well. I am personally not a huge fan.
Okay, you don't have to. I don't think you have to say that.
Well, I think you backed me into it a little bit here, Phil, when you asked me to talk about where I was going on vacation. I'm going to San Francisco only because I'm personally not a huge fan of the Gulf, but that having been said, I want the Gulf to recover. I want the people down there to do well, and I'll do anything that I can. I made reservations at a different hotel because I prefer to stay in California than go down to, the Gulf. Let me say this. I would love to go to the Gulf if I knew that there was a resort down there that is similar to the one that I'm going to, but there just isn't, and that's understandable because they don't really have that kind of money that goes down there. But if you go into Fraser Foods and pick up some of the slips that we've got for our drawings for different weekend getaways, you'll know what I'm talking about.
All right, 877. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to embarrass you.
It's not exactly what I wanted to talk about, but I understand you asked me the question, Phil.
All right. Robert Green is with us. He's the CEO of Fraser Foods on the Gulf, on getting business back to the Gulf. And it was Michelle Obama who today was speaking to a group of people. She was pitching vacationing in the Gulf, trying to get the business back there. Bob Green is doing that with his store as they are giving away getaways to the Gulf. The fact that he's going to San Francisco on his vacation and that he is going to be at a different resort speaks more to, I guess, as he was saying, the money that he has and what he can afford. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll get back here with Robert Green as we talk about going back to the Gulf. 877-876-PHIL, trying to get business for the Gulf. And it doesn't matter whether or not Robert Green is going there, if he's going to the Four Seasons or the Ritz. He feels that the Gulf is a good place for people of modest means. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. With me is Robert Green from Fraser Foods. All right, so we're talking here about the Gulf and the oil spill.
Phil, I just want to jump in here. I was looking at you on your video feed, and I saw you getting a little upset about the technical.
We've had a hum in the board here that I'm trying to fix. And
well, you've got it. You talk about vacations. I would recommend that you take a vacation.
Well, there's no doubt about that, man. I'd love to take a vacation.
I would recommend that, and I would recommend that you take a vacation to the Gulf States. I think it would be a great thing for yourself, as well as other personalities across the country, to recommend a vacation in the Gulf.
Well, I think that that's a great idea. And, I started my radio career in Florida. I lived in New Orleans, and I had a radio show in New Orleans for a year. I've been to the Keys. I love the Keys.
I think the Keys are an outstanding vacation spot, but I don't think that's the best place in the Gulf to go because I don't think that the Keys are not threatened by the oil. The Keys are still relatively pristine, and I think a lot of people are going to say, let's, you know, support Florida, let's go to the Caribbean. That doesn't support Florida, and that doesn't support the Gulf. Our campaign basically says you got to get your face right into it. And what we mean by that is if you were going to go to the Gulf on vacation, you go to Louisiana, you go to the Panhandle, you go to Mississippi, you go to the Texas coast. That's what we call pushing your face right into it and supporting the Gulf.
All right. I mean, but I mean, going to Florida, though.
No, no. See, I don't think Florida counts because Florida right now, they've got a few tar balls washing up on the beach. But they are nowhere near as bad off as the rest of the Gulf. We've really got to help these people out. And I think you and other radio personalities can do a lot to help the people of the Gulf Coast.
All right. And, but, you know, Bob, you're on my show to pitch this, and yet you're going to San Francisco for your vacation. So talk to my audience about that.
Well, I think I already did. I think I said,
well, if you could, because if you're asking me to go to Florida.
Well, I think what I said was the following thing. I think the Gulf Coast is beautiful. I think it is if I was a younger man and I was with my new bride, for instance, or I was a young man and I had young children, I think the Gulf Coast is a wonderful time. And you go and you do the things a young family does. You get the ice cream bars that melt on your hand and you have a ball, but I've worked a very long time, Phil. I've earned a good amount of money, and I want to now take a vacation where I don't have to deal with a lot of the things that the Gulf forces on you. But I say forces on you. Most people like it. I don't, but that doesn't make it a bad place.
That the all right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call. Here is Susan in Mobile, Alabama. Susan, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
I just cannot believe the perception that he has of this area. I wish that he would do a little more research. We have amazing resorts in this area with every amenity, golf courses.
Do you have the Four Seasons and the
We have Marriott's Grand Hotel here that is an amazing property with two golf courses, yacht slips, spas, very high-end cuisine, down on the actual Gulf. We have some properties that are $700-$800 a night resorts. Very high-end.
Well,
like I said, we're not talking Goonie Golf and snow cones.
No, I know that, but
and,
do you have the presidential suite here at the Paloma goes for $3,000 a night?
Are you there now? Are you there now?
There are higher ends here that do that, yes.
Now, I wanted to ask you this, Pam, because I heard some rumors. Did you, when we talk about the Mobile and some of these areas, is it true that in that part of the, well, you know what, I forgot my question, Bill. I apologize.
That's all right. So what Susan's basically saying is that there are high-end resorts there.
Well, she said the Marriott, and the Marriott's great. The Marriott's fantastic. It's not what I'm used to. That's all I'm saying. And I may be...
Well, that is actually probably on the lower end scale of some of the things I'm talking about. I think that you need to, whether that's where you're perfectly entitled to spend your vacation wherever you wish, but the idea that what I think the perception you're trying to put out here is that we've got Goonie Golf and snow cones. And we have a lot
of there's a lot of that nonsense, and I can't live with that anymore, you know.
No, but the lady's saying, and basically, Susan, what you're talking about, what I'm talking about, what Bob's talking about, is an adult resort. Goonie Golf and snow cones is when you have the family. You know, where we kick back and we do the spa thing and the golf thing and the, you know what I mean, Bob?
Yeah, what about the restaurants? What are they, Susan, what can you tell me about that?
What can I tell you about the restaurants?
Yes,
okay. What type of cuisine do you enjoy?
Well, let's say I wanted a very high end kind of a Yucatan seafood, maybe a snapper and garlic, maybe a you know.
Oh, absolutely.
What do they got? What kind of snapper?
Okay, let me
they
tell you
snapper?
About the restaurant that we ate in tonight.
I'm joking around. I used the word snapper.
Wait, hold on for a minute. What, Bob?
I was kidding about using the word snapper. It was crude.
But the restaurant I had tonight had a fresh grilled cobia, with a champagne caper cream sauce over orzo with fried asparagus. Okay?
I know what I was going to ask you. You're in Alabama. Doesn't that mean you've got dry counties? Yeah, that's it.
But in this area, no.
Okay. Susan, thanks for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Dry counties.
That's right. They'll cut you off. You'll be drinking apple juice. Apple juice while you're out on a hot day.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL, and on the line is Robert Green from Fraser Foods. We're talking about the Gulf and the Gulf of Mexico and getting business back there. Michelle Obama was giving a series of comments today about the Gulf and about the need for people to get back there and to vacation there.
There are still thousands of miles of beaches that have not been touched by the spill, and there are communities that, you know, thrive on tourism and on the economic power of beaches that have not been damaged. And we need to get the word out to the rest of the country, particularly for those who want to find ways to help folks in the Gulf. So this is one way to recognize that there are still opportunities to experience those beautiful beaches.
So that's Michelle Obama. And I know, Bob, you said that you heartily concur with the First Lady.
I absolutely do, Phil, and I'm grateful the First Lady made those comments because we do need to get back to the Gulf. I know that I have said on your program here this evening that I'm going to be going to San Francisco and to the Paloma Resort. Why? Well, a friend of mine has a financial stake in it, and I wanted to give him a hand, but that is something I'm doing reluctantly. I can't tell you that I'd rather be going to the Gulf because, as I said to you, I make a significant amount of money. So when you get to a certain tax bracket, I guess, you don't really go to the Gulf. George Steinbrenner just passed on, Phil, a great man. I doubt seriously that he ever vacationed in the Gulf, although I do know.
Whoa. George Steinbrenner had a shipbuilding business in Tampa.
All right, well, that was a shipbuilding business. That doesn't mean that he had a... That's got nothing to do with where he vacationed. I'm sure he was in Tampa building his ships, and then he went to a man with that kind of money, probably went to Europe, probably went to Italy, probably went to, the Riviera. But no, I think we all need to go to the Gulf, either physically or in our hearts and in our prayers go to the Gulf. And that's what I'm going to be doing this weekend.
877-876-PHIL. Well, in your hearts and in your prayers, I mean, I'm sure the people in the Gulf would appreciate, Bob, a good hard cash. Here's Tony in Mobile.
Well, Phil, I can tell you what we're doing promotionally is going to help the Gulf, too.
Here's Tony. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'm just amazed at your guest there, how hypocritical he is of the Gulf Coast. At one point, he says he loves the coast. And then the next point,
absolutely,
he says he doesn't really care for it. When's the last time you've actually been to the Gulf Coast, sir?
I can't hear you, sir.
When's the last time you've
My engineer to turn your volume up so we can hear you, Tony. Go ahead. Okay. Repeat your question.
I said, when's the last time you've actually been to the Gulf Coast, sir?
He's asking you.
No, he's asking you.
Are you asking me that, sir, Bob Green?
Yes, sir. When's the last time you've been to the Gulf Coast?
And your question is what?
When is the last time you have been to the Gulf Coast?
You're asking me the last time that I went to the Gulf Coast.
Yes, sir.
Because I thought you were talking about Mr. Henry. You know, we're doing a promotion in our stores right now encouraging people to get down to the Gulf Coast to spend
their
money.
Sir, I'm asking you when the last time you came. When was the last time you personally came down here?
I don't know where you are.
Mobile, Alabama. I am on the Gulf Coast.
I haven't been to Mobile, Alabama.
What about the Gulf Coast, period, sir?
Well, if you're talking about the Gulf Coast, you got to be specific because there.
I think we know what we mean by the Gulf Coast, Bob. The Gulf Coast? You mean the coast of Florida?
You know, the affected area.
Well, again, what I was saying to Phil, we don't know yet what the affected areas are going to be.
Dodging my question, sir.
No, sir, I'm not. Believe me, sir, I'm trying to answer your question.
Last time you came down here, because you sit here and you say how we have nothing but, what is it, ice cream and goofy golf.
You're not very educated on our Gulf Coast. Yeah.
Please listen to what I'm saying. You have not been down here. You do not know what type of resorts we have. You've done no investigating on it. And you've sat there on the radio, and you're sitting there on one side trying to promote come to the Gulf Coast on the other side. But they have nothing but, mediocre, middle to lower class people down there. That's where
you just said
your tax bracket, once you get to your highly esteemed tax bracket, that it's not worth coming down here to the Gulf Coast. I recommend anybody with money to come down here, except for you. These are times where you need to put your money where your mouth is, your personal money.
That's what I'm doing.
You need to come down here, and you need to eat a little crow and find out how wonderful of a time you can have down here, how well our resorts are, and you can take a mud bath in the backyard. I mean, a mud bath. You're sitting there saying we do not have mud baths down here. I mean, come on.
It's a very high-end relaxation of the Calistoga mud bath or the that kind of thing, or the Desert Hot Spring mud bath, and it's something I enjoy. But I'm not saying that the Gulf, because it doesn't have that, is not the kind of place that I want to go to. Now, I did not mean to say that there is goofy golf.
But when is
You're
the last
right.
time you have ever been here? You were just making a broad statement, but you have not given me an answer
me
when the last time you've been down
Gulf
here.
Coast. Is that would you call the Gulf Coast Houston, Texas?
Okay, well, anywhere from
would
Texas
you call
to
it?
The panhandle of Florida. Let's
I was
go
in
there.
Houston, Texas. I was in Houston, Texas last week.
Okay, but that's
yeah,
not
but that's
the
not the same thing. That's
No. Hold on. The gentleman said the Gulf Coast. I believe I answered his question last week.
He's talking about being on the beach at a resort.
That is not what I heard him ask. I'm sorry.
Let's do this. South of I-10. Do you know where that's at?
South of
I-10.
Of course I do. Of course I do.
Okay. When's the last time you've been south of I-10 between Texas, Mississippi, Louisiana, Florida, and Alabama?
Well, Austin, Texas is south of I-10. Houston is south of I-10. Well, Houston, I-10 runs through Houston.
Right. Now we're going to get into
I was
a
south of that.
Argument. When is the last
no,
time you
I just
put
simply
your
said
toes?
I was south of that.
Here we go. When's
You're
the last
asking
time
me.
You've put your toes into the Gulf of Mexico?
When's the last time you put your toes in the Gulf of Mexico? That's another one of those
Probably about 24 hours ago I did.
Your
now,
toes?
You, sir.
What about the rest of you? What about the rest of you? See, that's the kind of trick question that you think you're asking.
Wait a minute, Bob. The guy is asking you...
No, I think the gentleman means well, but he's trying to trick me up with the last time I put my toes into the... That doesn't mean anything.
I want to know, you're making this judgment on our tourism and our resorts
yes,
down
sir.
Here. But
that
the
is
problem
right.
is that you apparently have not been down here.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. I
when?
Was in Houston last
when?
Week. Last week,
Houston,
I was in Houston.
Houston does not count.
The
that's
Gulf
just
Coast.
Like me. Sir, that's just
well,
like me saying, I hung out in San Francisco. I was in Modesto.
I don't know
now
what
we,
the gentleman
now
is going
we,
to.
Now,
Bob, I'm going to ask you, when's the last time you went in swimming in the Gulf of Mexico?
Nobody swims in the Gulf of Mexico. That's a misnomer because... The water is not that clean.
And no, not because of the oil spill.
No, even without the oil spill. It's
Sir, you are highly uneducated when it comes to the Gulf Coast, and you're sitting here promoting.
Am I wrong about that?
I mean,
am I wrong about that?
You are very wrong, sir.
No, you're wrong about that. Bob, you're saying you want to promote business, and...
I know. I'm going to San Francisco, and you guys have a problem with that because you can't afford to go to the same resort that I go to. And that's really what we're talking about.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what we're talking about. You and this gentleman have a problem with me because I've got money.
I apologize.
No. Absolutely no problem with how you spend your money.
That's,
I do, however,
right, you,
have a problem with you.
I can't hear the caller. 877, will you turn these callers up, please? 877-876-PHIL. Richard, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Green, first of all, most people with money don't brag about it. What, do you know how many times you've bragged about how much money you have tonight?
Well, Mr. Hendry was asking me why I wasn't going to the Gulf Coast, and I wanted to make the audience know that I love the Gulf Coast, but the kind of money that I have for a vacation, it's too much for down there.
Well, with all due respect, Mr.
They
Green, you don't sound like you're on the
spend,
Gulf Coast. You sound, I mean,
I love it. I
no
love
offense.
It. I love,
no
it.
Offense
I love
at all,
it down there.
You sound like a hypocrite.
I love the Gulf Coast. I'm not being a hypocrite. I think there's a misunderstanding about what I mean when I say that I love it. I do love it. But I need to go up to San Francisco this weekend.
Well, I'm not trying to be offensive, but, I mean, you're coming across that like an elitist.
That's not offensive.
Well, that's what you sound like. I'm not.
Why would I be offended by that?
I'm not picking on you. I don't expect Michelle Obama to announce any vacation plans on the Gulf anytime soon. Why would you want to go to the Gulf? You've got tarpaulins.
Where are you calling from? Where are you calling?
You get the worst.
Where are you calling from?
Ever. Why would anyone
want
to go to the Gulf?
Where are you calling from? Where are you calling from?
I'm in the Southwest.
Where are you calling from?
I'm in Santa Fe.
Yeah, so you don't know anything about it either.
No, I know about it. I used to live in
no,
Florida.
No, you don't know anything about it. You live in the
I
desert. You live in the mountains. What do you know?
In Florida,
you don't know anything.
You were wrong.
What do you know about the
you
Gulf when you live in when you live in an adobe, you know, where there's Indians or the adobe
Steinberger.
Or the adobe Indian and everything.
Mr. Steinberger built.
All right, look at both of you guys. 877-876 Phil, world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil, Robert Green with us, and we just had a little bit of a technical glitch there. We're back, Bob, talking about the Gulf Coast. Now, that gentleman that we were just talking with there, he was in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and you seem to have a problem with the fact that he was in Santa Fe. We're talking about getting people down to the Gulf. You know,
well, Phil, the problem I had with him is he's trying to tell me about the Gulf, but he lives in the tail end of the Rocky Mountains. How does a guy that lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico, how does he know about the Gulf? How does he know about water? About the you know, that's about as opposite a place as you can get to the Gulf. Mountains, flat. Desert, water. And he's telling me. Now, Santa Fe, New Mexico has some beautiful hotels. You know, for all I know, that guy owns one of them. And then he's telling me, why don't I go to the Gulf? Why doesn't he leave his artist retreat? Why doesn't he go to the Gulf?
And maybe he does go to the Gulf. The fact is that you were saying that you're not going to the Gulf.
But I'm promoting people to go to the Gulf. Why do I have to go to the Gulf? What difference does it make whether I go to the Gulf or not? I'm telling people to go to the Gulf. And that ought to be good enough, in my opinion.
Well, it's not, because you're hearing people saying, you know, that they would rather you not be an elitist, that they would rather you...
Well, let me ask you something. You had me on your program to interview me about a push to get people to go to the Gulf, and this has turned into when you're arguing with me. Why?
You know, I asked you the simple... I didn't even ask you. You volunteered that you're not going to the Gulf.
Yes, I volunteered it. I said I'm not going to the Gulf, and that I am going to be instead going to San Francisco, and really that's all it should have taken. But instead you are making an issue out of it, and you are embarrassing me and Fraser Foods, and to be honest with you, it troubles me.
Well, I'm not, Mr. Green, I didn't mean to embarrass you or Fraser Foods. When you come on the air and say you're going to San Francisco...
Well, but that has been the effect.
You're going to San Francisco for your vacation and not the Gulf.
That's been the effect, the embarrassment.
You said you're going to San Francisco and not the Gulf for your vacation because you want to sit in a mud bath.
No, a friend of mine has a piece of this new hotel.
And a friend of yours has got a piece of a new hotel in San Francisco, but go down to the Gulf. And then you said it was a place for people of modest income.
And then you said, and then you said, and then you, that's what you're saying to me. And then you said, and then you said. And I'm saying to you, forget about what I said. Just go to the Gulf. Go there and enjoy yourself. And I think you're making it sound like if you go to the Gulf, it'll be a hellhole. I'm saying it's going to be nice.
No, you said it's going to be goofy golf and snow cones.
No, that lady said that. I didn't say that.
877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Here is David in Dallas, Texas, listening to us on KFXR. David, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, Phil. Thanks for taking my call. I think Bob
yes,
is honestly a person that really don't have any money. And if he do, he don't have as much as he's portrayed to have. And he's really elitist. And it's really speaking bad about the Gulf Coast. So it's unfortunate what happened in the Gulf Coast with the BP accident. And I think they should take Bob and stick him in the pipe and stop the leak.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
You got a lot of comedy. You got a lot of funny lines off there, but you didn't really say anything, did you?
Sorry, say that again, sir.
I said you got off a lot of funny lines, but you didn't say anything.
How can I be
an elitist and not be able to afford the hotel that I'm going to? How's that possible?
Well, you know, we as people can make our mouth say anything. You know what you can afford. You know you can. You might can pay for it, but can you afford it? You know, that's a different thing.
I don't need to convince you of that. I know.
Oh, trust me, I don't want you to convince me.
What are you doing? Are you going to the Gulf? You're not going down there. What are you talking to me about?
I go to the Gulf all the time. I'm an owner operator. I go to the Gulf all the time. Like I said, it's unfortunate.
I'm not talking about driving down. I know, but I'm not talking about driving down there to drop off some air mattresses. I mean, go down there and vacation.
What do you mean, drop off air mattresses?
I just left the Gulf in Panama City on vacation for the weekend.
Yeah. You did?
I sure did.
How did you like it?
I deep sea fish in the Gulf.
How did you like it this time?
Well, I didn't go there. We used to go in October, so I don't know if we'll be going out this year.
Wait a minute. You just said you were in Panama City for the weekend.
That was for vacationing. I went on vacation for the weekend.
How did you like it?
That was great.
Did you fish?
I had a great time down there.
Did you fish?
No, we didn't. Normally when I go deep sea fishing, it's out in the Gulf. I was at a hotel on the beach when I went vacation. Oh. When we go deep sea fishing, it's out on a boat.
Did you go swimming?
Sir?
Did you go swimming? Did you go swimming?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
No, this guy's lying.
What do you mean this guy's lying? What are you talking about?
How could you go swimming when they got the oil in it?
I thought you were on this program to promote the Gulf.
I am, but this guy is telling some stories. You went swimming in the Gulf, even with the oil.
Bob, you know, I tell you what, Phil has a great show, and you shouldn't waste these people's time.
I'm telling you, pal.
But you really don't know anything.
You went into the Gulf, even with the oil, you know, then the pictures that they're sending back.
I thought you were on the program to promote the Gulf and people going on vacation.
I am.
Then what's wrong with this guy? Why would you question whether this guy went swimming or why he didn't go deep sea fishing or anything else? He went there, he was in a hotel, he was on the beach, and he enjoyed himself.
And then I said, did you go swimming? And he goes, yeah, I had a great time. That's why I got to just say, man, that is such a load.
All right, thank you very much, David. 877-876-PHIL. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, and Robert, with the best of luck there at the Paloma Estates. I don't know what to tell you, the Paloma Resort, or whatever the hell he's calling that place. I can tell you that as you heard the First Lady saying, go down there, have yourself a good time, you know, enjoy yourself, and make sure that you have a pleasant stay there in the Gulf, and there are other people trying to get business down there. And Robert Green himself, of course, is doing the best that he can in encouraging people to get down to the Gulf of Mexico, but he's going up to San Francisco and staying at a 4-star hotel because that's what he's used to. 877-876-PHIL. Our website is philhendryshow.com. And we not only have all of our shows that we currently do available for download wherever and however you want to, you know, pull them off the internet. There they are. Pull them off of our website, I should say. There they are. We also have an archive that goes back many, many years and many different generations of the Phil Hendry Show, a wildly successful and popular archive that has made the Phil Hendry website one of the funniest on the internet. That, according to PC World. So head over to philhendryshow.com. You got to get a backstage pass to really appreciate the 100% totality of the show, watching it as well as listening to it on our video cast every night as well. And you also have access to our comments section on our news feed and a guaranteed email response at philhendryshow.com. 877-876-PHIL. It's the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
There are still thousands of miles of beaches that have not been touched.
Do not use at your house. I have warned you, she will be fired if she goes to your house.
There are still thousands of miles of beaches.
I do remember having a bag of mushrooms in my refrigerator.
That's beautiful, man. Oh, that's Nicolas Cage. 877-876-PHIL. That's perfect. I do remember having a bag of mushrooms in my refrigerator. Anyway, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL and online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com for all your listening needs. You can watch us right now online. There is a live streaming video of us as we speak. And, oh, I got to turn off the fan.
I bought a new fan.
It's not a big deal, but I mean, I bought a new fan, so I'm feeling very cooled down by that. Wait a second, man.
Yeah, do the other one.
I'll do it, bud. I'll do it. Don't put your fingers in it. It's not the fabric kind of blade that we had. That's a fan that can hurt you. So watch it. All right, 877-876-PHIL, as well as our website, philhendryshow.com. You can watch live streaming video, listen to live streaming audio of our show right now, and get the downloads each and every day after the show. So you can listen to it. We are making our archives downloadable. 2004's January and February, both months, 60 days or there, you know, therein, are now downloads. So not only can you listen to years and years of archives, you can download this stuff. This is the beauty of it. This is the beauty of getting a backstage pass. You also have access to a comment section that only the subscribers have access to. Guaranteed email response from Phil sooner or later. And it's right there with our backstage pass, plus all the other goodies that will be coming your way. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Now, Dr. Ron Tarner is going to join us here in just a moment. We're going to be talking more about the science, really, of the Gulf and this terrible calamity that has befallen the Gulf of Mexico. A little bit about the science, but first I want to just give you an update. This is from the Gulf of Mexico, Gulf gusher to keep flowing as cap test delayed. A pivotal moment of the Gulf oil crisis hit an unexpected snag on Tuesday evening when officials announced they need more time before they could begin choking off the geyser of crude at the bottom of the sea. BP and federal officials did not say what prompted this decision or when the testing would begin on a new, tighter-fitting cap it had just installed on the blown-out well. The oil giant had been scheduled to start slowly shutting off valves on the 75-ton cap aimed at stopping the flow of oil for the first time in 3 months. It seemed that BP was on track to start the test Tuesday afternoon. The cap lowered over the blown-out well on Monday night is designed to be a temporary fix until a well is plugged underground. A series of methodical preliminary steps were completed before progress was stalled. Engineers spent hours on a seismic survey, creating a map of the rock under the seafloor to spot potential dangers like gas pockets. It also provides a baseline to compare with later surveys. An unstable area around the wellbore could create bigger problems if the leak continued elsewhere. So one of the scientists on scene, a man by the name of Don Van Nieuwenhuis, Director of Professional Geoscience Programs at the University of Houston said this is a very, very big concern. They need to get a scan of where things are. That way, when they do pressure testing, they know to look out for ruptures or changes. So there's no question, and I will get to, Dr. Ron Turner on the line here. There's no question that there was all of a sudden somebody, Ron, said something like, have we checked for this yet? And it turned out maybe that they hadn't checked for that. What do you think?
Well, Phil, there's a bigger question, and thank you for having me on your program, because this week, Scientists United for Action in the Gulf, which is a organization of some 350 scientists, and among them are Ron Lyle, Dr. Jim Canan, myself, and others, are going on as many television and radio programs as we can. We have also published a series of articles in scientific journals that have been published both solo and in tandem with other scientists. What's important now is for the public to get educated. And we are disappointed in the level of education that the public is evidencing, Phil, when it comes to this oil calamity. You just asked me a question about a problem with this cap, and I would love to be able to answer that question. But we have other questions that need to be answered, too. And there's a lot of bad questions being asked, a lot of stupid questions being asked.
Well, the question that I just asked you, is that a stupid question?
What was your question?
The question that I asked you was, they have delayed the sealing of this cap and the testing of these valves because it's possible that there are some gas pockets or some geologic features that may make this a dangerous test, that the pressure that is created by them sealing these valves could cause some kind of a geologic event that they don't want to have happen. Am I right in what I'm asking?
All right. That's a good question. That's a question that I will answer as a scientist. But we are putting people on notice. And this is really the only way that we have found to be effective in educating the public to ask questions that are sensible, that have to do with helping clean up the Gulf, that have to do with helping seal off this terrible leak, asking good questions. And to that end, we will be responding, and I know it sounds ridiculous, but we're going to be responding, and this is, you could almost call this, Philly, kind of a theatrical event, but we're going to be responding in baby talk.
In baby talk?
In baby talk. Now, we're going to be responding to people who are asking questions so stupid that it demands that we make an example of them. Now, do I break into baby talk as a result of your question? No, that was a good question. Then let me answer. The answer to your question is, in part. In part, it is correct that they want to make sure they look at this map, this geological map, and ensure that no event, as you say, takes place as the result of them sealing the valve. You're wrong when you say that they just thought of it. No, they didn't just think of it. Something else has happened that they are not saying the reason for, and I don't know what it is. So they're using this as the public statement. And
well, what else could that be?
All right. Now, I want your audience to understand something. That question that you just asked me, what else could it be? I have to tell you, that's a stupid question.
Why is that a stupid question?
It's a stupid question because when you say, what else could it be, you're not going to get an answer to that question. What else could it be besides the possibility of a geologic event? Don't ask a question you're not going to get an answer to, and it doesn't matter. The fact is they've stopped the oil from, they have stopped testing this valve because there's a problem. So now I have to answer that. When you said, what else could it be, this is what I'm doing, as well as other scientists associated with SUFA. And
SUFA is what?
That's another stupid question. That's,
oh, come on, doctor. What SUFA? Sinus United for Action.
Yes. So here is my answer to what else could it be? B-do-do. 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 Okay. That is baby talk.
And all right, can I ask something? Are you going to be, you and scientists across the country are going to be talking that way to, and what's the point?
To make, to get people to recognize when they're asking stupid questions that they only ask to make themselves look important as opposed to asking questions that will actually give them information to help them protect and preserve a planet which is right now being badly taken care of by the human race. Now, we will talk normally to anyone that asks a good question, but I'm going to be talking baby talk to anyone that makes a baby-style statement. And
when I asked you the question, when I said to you, I just read the news story from the Gulf, they had suspended closing off those valves. They used as the reason that they were concerned by closing those valves, they would back the pressure up into the line that might generate something of a geologic nature. They need to look at where these gas pockets are. Am I right or am I wrong about this? They need to look...
No, you're right.
Then they need to look at the geologic reality, the geologic physical aspects of what they're dealing with. And you said that I'm right in saying that that's a concern, but I'm wrong in saying that that's why they, that that's why they've delayed shutting the valves off. And then when I said, what else could it be...
When you asked, what else could it be, that was a stupid question because... You know, even if I gave you the answer to that, it's not giving you any more information. It's simply you trying to make yourself look like you're the big time talk show interviewer. And I'm not, Phil, understand, I'm not putting you, I'm not criticizing you. It's a reaction that you're having. It's an automatic reaction. So I have to respond when you ask me the question. Go ahead, please ask me the question again.
I don't like the characterization big-time talk show interviewer. I'm not trying to do that. I asked a question that seemed like a logical follow-up.
I understand. Please ask the follow-up again, please.
What else could it be?
Me no know what can't be. Me no know.
All right, and that's supposed to do what?
That is baby talk. Okay, and...
I know it's baby talk. What is that supposed to do?
That tells you that your question was on the level of an infant. And so I responded as an infant. And when the American people stop asking questions, I'll give you an example of what the American people say. When is Obama going to do something about it? Okay, that's a stupid question. That's what prompted the Scientists United for Action baby talk, the campaign of baby talk. So when someone says to me, as I was asked last night at a lecture I was giving in Pasadena, they said, when is Obama going to do something about this? I said, Obama dot know what do. Obama dot know, but Obama try best he can. And I pretended like I was crying. And
you did that, and did you tell people you were going to be baby talking them?
No, I did not. And the first people laughed, and I didn't understand why they were laughing. I don't think it's funny. I was trying. And I said, Obama dot know what do. BP cause big... BP bad. BP bad.
Okay, Obama not know what do BP bad. That's what you're trying to tell people.
That's what I'm trying to tell people. No, I answered like an infant. That's what I'm trying to tell people.
So the question of what's Obama going to do about BP is so stupid.
It's beyond stupid. It's an infant. It's what an infant would ask if an infant could talk. And so I responded as how an infant would respond if an infant could talk. What Obama do about oil spill? B-do-do, Obama dot do, BP bad, BP cause oil. That's what we did, and that's what we'll continue to do until the American people understand what we are up against. It is an Armageddon, an environmental Armageddon. It is an environmental apocalypse is what it is.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. So that is Dr. Ron Tarner, part of Scientists United for Action, as they... have been giving a series of interviews on television and radio about the oil calamity in the Gulf. They are doing these interviews, and if they are asked what they call stupid questions or questions that an infant would ask, they respond in baby talk. They're trying to send the message to the American people that they need to get more educated on the BP disaster. So I would ask you for your phone calls and your questions, but please keep in mind that this is the kind of thing he's going to be engaging in with you if you ask a question that he considers to be, quote, stupid. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, online at philhendryshow.com, and we're back here with Dr. Ron Tarner. And Dr. Tarner is part of the Scientists United for Action in the Gulf, giving, and there are other scientists at present, not maybe tonight, but elsewhere, doing these interviews. You're saying that if somebody asks a stupid question about the Gulf, you answer in baby talk. It, has the American, has the response by the American people, the curiosity, the questions, the attempt at getting answers by the American people been that shallow?
Phil, I'm afraid it has, and in fact, that question you just asked me right there, I'm tempted to answer in baby speak, but I know that it comes from, it's a non-oil, it's a non-Gulf question, that it comes from an earnest heart, but it's still a very stupid question.
Why is that stupid? I'm asking, seriously, you say the American people's curiosity and their questions about this.
Well, I'll give you an example. I was standing in Mobile, Alabama about a week ago talking to the owner of a bed and breakfast who asked me the following question. He said, Dr. Tarner, is there any way you can burn the oil off the beach? And I even wrote down my response to him. I did it at baby speak. Because
you consider that a stupid question?
Oh, my God, yes. What, is there any way we can burn it off the beach? You think that's a good question?
And I don't know. I'm just...
Well, here's the way I responded to him. I said, here it is. I said, ow, my brain, and please note the pronunciation of brain, Blaine, my brain hurt from big question that you ask.
So you're sarcastic? You're insulting?
No, I'm not insulting.
That's exactly what it sounds like to me. You're sarcastic and insulting to a business owner who wants to know if there's a way to...
You want to burn oil off of a beach. All right. Go ahead and kill, I don't know how many thousands of human beings that are trying to find a place where there isn't an oil ball to lay down and get a tan, and you've just set fire to a human being. Is that what you're talking about?
Obviously, you would evacuate the beach. You know.
No, not obviously. See, this is what I'm saying to you. People don't think.
Well, obviously, if you suggested let's burn the oil off of the sand, that you would evacuate the beach, right?
Me, no, no. Me, no, no. Okay, I know you're asking.
Yeah, don't please, doctor.
No, I'm going to answer you in the baby talk. That was a stupid question, so me, no, no about oil burn off of sand. Mr. Henry, I know that it infuriates you and it angers people. I'm angry. I'm angry at having to listen to a grown adult ask questions that have been asked and answered a million times, and we still have a gulf that is a seething, it's an oil pan. That's what our Gulf is. The Gulf of Mexico is now a filthy old oil pan underneath some filthy jalopy.
877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show. Let's go to a phone call. Here I have Bill listening to us in Salt Lake City on KKAT. Bill, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, Phil, how are you?
Good, sir.
Excellent. Ron, you're an idiot. I don't care how smart you are in whatever it is.
That doesn't make any difference.
You're not very nice either. You've got to be kidding me. People are trying to learn, and your response is to tell them how stupid their question is. Did you ever consider that maybe you're actually hindering the learning process?
You said bad thing to be.
Oh, come on. Come on, doctor.
Well, the man started out with an insult. Why should I talk to him like an adult?
Well, because you talking to Phil like an adult?
You
feel
bad.
Like you're talking to Phil like an adult?
Seriously.
I am talking to Phil as an adult when he asks an adult question, just as I would talk to you as an adult if you spoke as an adult. But since you
what you want is for people to speak to you like a scientist. So you think
that's a good point.
If you get together with all the other scientists in the world, then yes, you can have a great scientific adult conversation. But if you get somebody who's brilliant as a doctor or brilliant as a lawyer or brilliant in any other field but doesn't understand your field, you don't feel that you should respect them. What I hope
How many different ways do you want me to answer this question? Can we burn the oil off the water? How many different ways can we answer that question? Finally, you have to say to someone, we don't burn oil off water. Okay.
Well, but I don't think you ever answered it any of the ways other than the way you answered it. So maybe you could start explaining it. And then guess what? Somebody learns. And they say,
We have explained to the American people as much as we possibly, as patient as I am, I only have so much patience. And I'm sure you understand, or maybe you don't, you only have so much patience for stupidity, and then you've got to move on.
Wait a minute. This man made a very good point when he said that it isn't the purview. It's not the area of learning for a lot of people. Okay.
Big word. The bad used a big word.
Okay. So what you want to do instead is piss people off, right?
Be not piss people off. You see, Phil, you're forcing me into baby speak, just as this man did when he called me a turd or whatever it was that he called me. The people that
he didn't call you a turd. I don't know. 877-876 Phil. We'll take a break here and we'll be back here. Ron Tarner is with us. What happened to that gentleman?
He probably hung up. He was probably so embarrassed. Ron, you're a turd. Ow, that bad say bad word. Call me do. Okay, if that's what he wants to do. Fine.
Phil Hendry.
I'll play it any way they want to play it.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL is our number. Our guest is Dr. Ron Tarner from the Mountain Meadow Observatory. We had Dr. Tarner on last Friday night, but we've got him back to talk about the Scientists United for Action in the Gulf. As we continue to talk about this oil that is flowing into the Gulf, British Petroleum has announced this evening that they have put off closing the valve, this valve test, because of geologic concerns, because they have to look at this map. You are very, very vocal, Dr. Tarner, in saying that the questions the American people have been asking about this oil problem have been so stupid that you are now, and other scientists are now, answering with baby talk. And I submit to you what that gentleman who was just on said, and I thought it was a very good thing that he said, when he said that there are a lot of people well-schooled in a lot of things, and yet they are not that educated on this topic, and they need that education.
Well, they very well need that education, Bill, but I have got to tell you, I'm a scientist, and I have a patience level and a patience limit for answering these questions. Now, one of the reasons why I came up with baby talk is so that I could control my own sense of disappointment. And yes, at times, even an anger that I feel when I have to answer this question over and over again, when people say, why can't they bring in more skimmers? That's because skimmers don't work. Skimmer don't work. See, that helps me release the anger that I have. And it is profound anger. And I'll even let you know how deep it is. If you saw 28 weeks later, and you know what I mean when I say knuckle deep with your thumbs, if you saw Blade Runner, that is how I feel. And
I don't. What do you mean knuckle deep with the thumbs?
In Blade Runner, when he shoves his thumbs into that guy's eyes, that's how I.
Oh my God! Are you telling me that your impatience with people's questions is so deep that you have that rage virus, or
no? I'm saying that the anger that I have. What do you mean rage virus? I'm talking.
Well, you mentioned the movie 28 Weeks Later.
No, I'm saying I get so angry that I want to just shove my thumbs into the eyes of the person asking the question, but I don't do that. Instead, I wish you'd listen to me because I'm saying I don't do that. Instead, I say the skimmers are the Dutch people. They're not the American people. I have to do that. I have to do that. And I know a lot of other scientists do.
So you don't think you've got some kind of a biochemical problem that when someone asks you a dumb question, you want to shove your thumbs into their eyes, like in Blade Runner, so you talk baby talk?
You can laugh, Mr. Henry. There are those of us fighting the good fight for the Gulf, and we are fighting the fight for our planet. And I'm doing everything I can to keep from losing control of myself. And yes, I use the baby speak alternative.
877-876-PHIL. I don't know who came up with that. Let's talk to Adam in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Adam, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I can only come up with one of two things with this gentleman. Either he doesn't have the ability to control himself to the point where he can actually speak to somebody and understand that they have a genuine desire to know, and he doesn't have that ability to speak to them, so he shouldn't be doing what he's doing. He's in the wrong position. Or, how can I put it?
Well, you know, we have a very serious situation going on in the Gulf. And
obviously, but if
I would think that people have been educating themselves, if you read a newspaper, so that when they come to me and they say, why don't they have more skimming boats? And why don't they have more skimming boats? The Dutch people have them.
Right, okay. You already said that. You've already
covered
that.
If they want to talk that way, I could go there.
Sir,
I could do that.
Let me speak for a moment, please. Sir, you may be a very intelligent person, but those intelligence are wasted on America. Please let me speak.
Because
the intelligence is wasted when you don't have the ability to communicate those ideas to those you do not know when they are asking legitimate questions.
Repetitive questions. They are not legitimate. Ask me a question.
I would not waste my time in asking you a question, because no matter what, you are going to be the prima donna and decide whether it's stupid or not. If I ask a question, it's because
I
genuinely...
that you've got a stupid question.
Genuinely...
You know that you only have stupid questions.
Sir...
Hold on for a minute, Adam. Ron, I can't hear this man.
It is Dr. Turner.
Okay, Dr. Turner, I can't hear him when you're jumping all over him. Go ahead, Adam.
Sir, if I ask a question, it means I genuinely want to know an answer to it. Now, you may deem it as being a stupid question, but to me, it is not. That's why I asked. There is no question that is stupid other than the ones that was never asked. We ask questions to learn, and you educate ourselves.
You could have found out in the newspaper. The newspaper could cover all the questions that you have to ask. Like, for instance,
the newspaper covers the questions that the reporter wants to ask.
Here's
a little different.
Okay, what is it? You have the courage to ask the question.
There is no asking you a question. It's not worth asking you a question. You're not the person.
This man's not going to ask you a question because you're just going to go into baby talk if this man asks you a question. Okay?
Oh, thank you very much. What did they used to call Johnny? The Great Karnak. Thank you, Great Karnak. You know the future, huh?
I know that if this man, any question this man asks is going to be stupid.
All right, Phil, then why don't you jump into the breach and you ask an intelligent question?
No, I can't believe
I'd like you to ask an intelligent question.
That comment about the interviewer. That blew my mind. I can't believe you put up with that comment about the interviewer. That was not only rude and insulting, that was ignorant.
Why? What did he say?
What did I say?
Well, when you called him, you only asked the question to make yourself seem like a brilliant interviewer.
That's right. That's right.
Well, that's good. But you go ahead and ask me a question.
All right. Here's a question. I'd like to know what is a reasonable timetable, knowing what the pressure is, knowing the extent of the deposit that they're working with, knowing the equipment available, and knowing the tests and also knowing the technologies that they're trying to apply here to cap this thing. What is a reasonable time frame when they'll have this well capped? I knew it.
Well, you didn't let me answer.
No, you're going into baby talk. Ooh.
Yes, I'm going to the baby speak. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. In my life.
In your life. What is a reasonable time frame for when this thing will be capped?
President Obama, he probably don't. I don't know. There, are you happy?
See, I'm right, and this man's right. There's no question that I can ask that you won't mock.
Excuse me, you asked me one question, and I mocked it because it was dumb. Now, that guy doesn't want to ask any questions because he's hiding behind your apron.
No.
Okay, I gotta take a break. Not take a break, I got to take another call. Adam, thank you so much, though, for your call, sir. I appreciate it. 877-876-PHIL. That gentleman, I think, said it well. He's not going to ask a question. He's going to be mocked.
Why does he think that?
I asked a pretty damn good question.
You asked me when I think that they're going to have the well capped. You know how many times I've been asked that question?
No, I didn't. But that's not how I asked it.
No, you put a lot of real fancy trimmings on it. You asked a lot of, the geologic. You put a lot of big words on it with a lot of different syllables, but it's the same dumb question. When are they going to have it capped? Probably when President Obama becomes Jesus Christ. There. Now you made me blaspheme. Because, Phil, this is a problem.
I made you do what?
I said that you forced me into a blasphemous line of thinking, because this is a problem.
I didn't force you to do that at all. You did.
No, when you asked me when is it going to be capped, I answered by, in the simple-minded way people want me to answer it, which is that, well, Obama's Jesus, so I guess he'll come down and point at it, and it'll stop leaking oil. Is that what you think?
No, that's not what I think. What I'm trying to find out is, in all honesty, what would be an outside shot? What would be the outside guess? Chris in Nashville, Tennessee, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Chris, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just have a comment, and I just wanted to say that it feels like that the doctor is being extremely condescending when somebody asks a simple question, whether he'd already been asked that or not. The person asking that question really didn't know whether he'd been asked that question or not. And I don't know what his doctor is in, but it feels like that he's not real receptive to somebody, again, trying to get a decent answer to a simple question. A good question,
Mr. Henry,
doctor, yes. Good question I'd like to put to you would be, if you have all this knowledge about the way things are going down and what has happened and what's going on, why did you not put yourself in the forefront of this incident when it first happened and say, hey, allow me to offer to you my information and my knowledge so we can rectify this situation now? Now, that's a pretty direct question. Pretty direct.
That is a direct question, but unfortunately, you know what's coming. Baby speak.
Well,
why?
The reason would be is because I don't think you really have a good, legitimate answer for that. I think that more times than not, that's probably an easy way for you to get away and avoid giving a direct answer to what is pretty much a prudent and effective question. You know, I mean, if you had all the knowledge and you saw they were having trouble, why didn't you just go, hey, can I come in and offer some suggestions to y'all? I mean, whether you take them or not, allow me to do this for you, see if I can help the community. But I know you thought you'd wait until now things are
happening. I'm going to answer your question. I'm going to answer your question. I won't use baby speak. Although I do feel your question qualifies for baby speak, but I won't use it.
I think it's a damn good question. I think it's a great question.
We've already ascertained, Phil, that I don't think your opinion really matters.
Well, it matters insofar as I'm the host of the show.
Okay, well, you just pulled your ace card, didn't you? You're going to pull the race. You're pulling the race card, aren't you?
What do you mean the race card?
You're pulling the race card. Now, your question, sir, I'll answer it. Do you want to know why I didn't offer my services to the scientific and technologic community when this happened?
Yes, sir.
Because certain members of that community are jealous of what I've been able to find out. They know that I have the patent on 5 different pieces of operating equipment that could put a lot of these so-called businesses out of business, these cleanup businesses, these skimming. They know who I am, and they're scared to death of me.
Oh, brother.
What does old brother mean?
Oh, that sounds like so much horse dung. How do we know?
How dare you?
What do you mean they're jealous of you? How do we know what's going on in your business?
This man asked me a question, and I resisted baby speak, didn't I? Even though I get enraged to the point where I want to press my thumbs into a man's eyes. And now you're what are you saying?
And this whole thing about you being enraged to the point of pressing your thumbs into a guy's eyes, how do I know that you are so, you know, that you are so envied in the scientific and technological communities that they don't want to know what you got to say?
Because I picked the phone up and I said, Rod Tarter here, when you guys get done screwing around, you know where I am. And they haven't called. You know why? Because they're afraid of me. Because they're afraid that I am going to garner most of the accolades with this thing flying his cap. There. Are you happy? I didn't use baby speak, and I gave you a straight answer. And what did you do? You insulted me.
Yeah, I insulted you, because it sounds like, as I said, horse dung. It sounds like a lot of paranoid, forgive me, it sounds like a bunch of coast-to-coast stuff. Anyway, Terry, and I say that with all due respect. Terry, thank you very much for your call. 877-87, whoever that was. Was that Terry?
No, that was Tina.
Tina?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Tina. It wasn't a Tina. It was a guy.
Yeah, I know, but his name was Tina.
His name wasn't Tina. We'll be back. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
No, I think it was Tina.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL and online at philhendryshow.com. Ron Tarter with us as we wrap up here, talking to Ron about this terrible disaster, oil-wise, the BP disaster in the Gulf, and the education of the public and the knowledge of the public, the questions the public asks. And I don't know what Scientists United for Action in the Gulf is going to accomplish, Ron, when someone asks a question that you deem to be so stupid, you respond in baby talk. I don't know what you hope to prove. I don't know who you hope to educate.
You know, Phil, it's very funny to be Stephen Hawking, who I know and I don't like. And I've known Stephen since he came to the United States, and I've listened to much of what he's had to say on a variety of topics. He has a great popularity, and I know it's based in no small measure on the fact that he is, and I'll put this as kindly as I can, an unusual-looking man.
I don't want to talk about that, okay?
No, hold on for a minute. What do you mean you don't want to talk about that?
I don't want to talk about Stephen Hawking's malady. I don't want to talk about an unusual-looking man.
You don't want to talk about the fact that Stephen Hawking attracts very beautiful women. You don't want to talk about that. And you don't want to talk about the fact that while Stephen Hawking attracts beautiful women, every Friday night I am starting all over again. It's as if every Friday night I have been born all over again. I'm an infant all over again. And so I have to do something before I get much older to make my statement. And to that degree, I came up with baby talk. And you may think it's silly, but if you do some of the racist jokes that Stephen Hawking tells... And
why are we talking about Stephen Hawking?
You know what? Nobody wants to talk about what Stephen Hawking does wrong. All we want to do is talk about...
Why are we talking about him when we're talking about BP and the oil problem?
I don't talk about BP oil problem.
There you go with baby talk. Why, was that a stupid question?
It was a very stupid question, yes.
Because I want to talk about BP and not Stephen Hawking. That's a stupid question.
Stephen Hawking has more to do with the interference of information in this country than most people dare to think.
877-876-PHIL. Let me go over to a phone call, and it's Bruce in Boulder, Colorado. Bruce, hi. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Ron Tarter. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, just a couple comments for the doctor. Doctor, I was taught by my father, and I've taught my four boys, that there are no stupid questions. There are only stupid answers.
No, there are. And there are stupid questions.
Because the people that are... I get bombarded with questions all day. I just do home repair. When the customer watches me, they ask me questions a lot of times. Some of them, to me, seem very silly because everything seems very simple to me. I chalk it up to ignorance. Hey, they really want to know.
Do you get to use a hammer?
Excuse Excuse me?
Do you get to use a hammer?
Oh, come on.
Well, he wants to do a speech. Do you get to use a hammer and a nail? See?
What are you doing that for?
Because he's giving a speech.
He's giving us his opinion.
I'm giving you an opinion. Are you so educated and so arrogant that you cannot listen to anyone else if it's not exactly on your line or your level?
If it's boring, what do you want me to say? Do you want me to say yes? Do you want me to lie and say yes?
Did you ever think that maybe these people are not calling you for your help? Because I wouldn't call you after listening to you.
I'd not call me for my
help. Why would I call an educated, arrogant, pompous guy to come and help me when everything I might say to him, I might get some baby talk answer?
Well, you have hammer and nail. You go hammer house.
What, you know what, Ron? All you want to do...
It's Dr. Tarner.
No, it's Ron. It's Ron. I'm going to call you Ron.
Let me tell you something, Fred. I worked 8 years for that doctorate.
You might have worked 8 years, but you've not gained any respect on this show, and I don't think you're entitled to that doctor at all. You have been saying to people...
What do you mean doctor at all? It's a doctorate.
That's what I said. And this man made some good statements about no stupid questions, only stupid answers, and...
Men say stupid answers. Oh, boy, the baby talk fails me. That's how dumb both you guys are. The baby talk fails me. And you guys think that it's easy. It's not. When we are looking at a worldwide calamity, do you know the oil that's being pumped into the Gulf? It could get all the way around the world, and then it'll just be... I don't know what it'll be.
How long would that take?
Maybe about 5 minutes.
You see how stupid you are?
But you're the one that's stupid with the oil could go around the world. Here's a guy that works as a carpenter, or this gentleman is a framing carpenter or something, and he is answering the questions of his customers as patiently as he can, even though they may be the dumbest questions in the world. I'll bet you when you ask a guy like that a question, you sound like an idiot, Ron.
What guy?
A guy that might be redoing the interior of your home.
I won't put myself in that position. My wife will ask. Well, I don't have a wife anymore, but my girlfriend will. I'll have her ask the question so I don't sound stupid. That's what people don't understand. And I'll tell you one other thing. Do you think that Stephen Hawking talks to the guy that's putting in his toilet? No, he doesn't. You know why? Because Stephen Hawking doesn't own a toilet. Do you know why? Because Stephen Hawking said...
All right, thank you. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
This is a bag.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I'm not going to the wedding.
Why not?
Because
there are still thousands of miles of beaches that...
You made me moneyless. I used to have $100,000 a year when you met me.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we'll go anywhere to find it. Although it's not exactly the number one target on the agenda every night, we try to get to a little bit of that. Mostly we just try to have a couple of laughs, and to that end, you must have a backstage pass to our website, philhendryshow.com, where you can watch as well as listen. Watch as well as listen. Watch our live streaming video and listen to our live streaming audio. You can get the download the next day. Download all of our shows at philhendryshow.com, and download a good part of our archives as well as we continue to work on that, and access our comments section on our website as well as guaranteed email response from me, Phil Hendry. It's all there with a BSP at philhendryshow.com. 877-876-PHIL. George Steinbrenner has passed on. He was the owner of the New York Yankees. He was, for a while there in baseball, he was bigger than life. He was the story. He was the beginning. He was the end. He bought the New York Yankees, and through his horse trading, and through his cajoling, and through his oftentimes infuriating meddling with the ball club, they won a few championships under George Steinbrenner. He returned the Yankees. He returned the pinstripe Bronx Bombers, if you will, to those glory days when the Yankees were the rulers of the American League and almost yearly world champions. He was 80 years of age. He was the controversial but beloved boss. Well, beloved, who turned around the Yankee franchise in 37 years of ownership. He died this morning in Tampa after suffering from a massive heart attack. New Yorkers talk with Reuters as they remember the boss. That ain't the New Yorkers talking with Reuters. This is New Yorkers talking with Reuters.
What was that? Tubular Bells.
No, that wasn't Tubular Bells here.
Oh, my goodness. This is a terrible day for New York. George has been great. He's always brought the winning chemistry to New York. And we just got to keep it going. George, we miss you. We love you, George.
He was the Yankees for so many years. I mean, he's part of New York culture. You think about Seinfeld and everything else. Everything was George Steinbrenner. So he's a huge loss. It's a huge loss to baseball.
It's like the end of an era, I think, definitely.
Now, normally, George Steinbrenner, or Larry David, rather, played the George Steinbrenner character on Seinfeld, but on this one episode, Steinbrenner made the cameo himself.
I'm not going to the wedding.
Why not?
Because Jerry is bringing a date. I am not an usher. I don't have anyone to talk to, and I'm not sitting at that singles table all by myself.
Wait a minute, young lady. What's this about singles tables? I don't sit at singles tables. Singles tables are for losers. The Yankees have won 33 pennants and 22 World Championships. We're winners. We don't sit with losers.
Well,
and I've got an idea. You're going to go to the party with me.
Oh, well, gee.
You dance, don't you? Lose a little weight, get yourself in shape, and then when they throw the bridal bouquet, you'll maybe get it.
So that's Steinbrenner on the Seinfeld show. Steinbrenner's micromanaging on the field and his penchant for pursuing high-priced free agents and later taking a key role in escalating their salaries earned him a reputation as one of the most controversial figures in sports and made him beloved yet polarizing in New York City. George Steinbrenner, for those of you younger and don't remember those days, George, if you want to know how it is the athlete as superstar came about, more than any other guy in sports, George Steinbrenner was the guy. He paid the money. When a guy was a free agent, and free agency came into baseball sometime in the early 70s, I forget exactly which year it was, the Andy Messersmith case was pivotal in gaining baseball players their free agent status. Up until then, there was a thing called a reserve clause, which most progressive industries don't have anymore. Nonetheless, there was a thing called a reserve clause, and baseball, you know, Curt Flood, who was a player for the St. Louis Cardinals, was the first one to sue Major League Baseball, saying that the reserve clause basically kept a player tied to the same team for the rest of his life, because these teams kept signing these players. I got a reserve clause, reserve clause, reserve clause. I'll sign you if no other team, you know, can sign you for more money. And there was this kind of collusion going on between the owners. Along comes Curt Flood. He sues, and this makes its way through the courts. And Andy Messersmith, I think, was the first player to gain his free agency. Well, George Steinbrenner was the first owner to come along in the free agency era of Major League Baseball to say, I'll pay, I've got the money, and I'm paying. I own the New York Yankees. And that means not only am I going to pay, I'm going to pay real good. And by God, this guy went out and he got the big names. He went out, he got the Catfish Hunters. He went out and he got the Reggie Jacksons. And when the Yankees were at their greatest, we're talking about the Thurman Munsons, and we're talking about Roy White, and we're talking about the Greg Nettles, and we're talking about just a phenomenal Chris Chambliss, talking about the phenomenal teams that he put on the field. He paid them, and he paid them well. And if they didn't perform, he got up in their faces. Hence all of the arguments that he would have with the Reggie Jacksons of the world. And not only that, of course, the great celebrated battles he had with Billy Martin, a tremendous manager, one of the greatest managers ever in the history of baseball. And yet who fired this guy more than anybody? George Steinbrenner. Steinbrenner brought in guys like, he won championships with guys like Bob Lemon as manager of the New York Yankees, as well as guys like Billy Martin. All the way along the line, it was George Steinbrenner there driving people crazy, making people nuts, hiring, firing, hiring, firing, and making the New York Yankees world's champions, or if not world's champions, damn close year in and year out. And as we mentioned, he also had feuds with Yogi Berra. He fired Billy Martin twice. He let his sons Hal and Hank run more of the family business, the baseball team, and other aspects of the business as his health declined. He was in fragile health for years, resulting in fewer public appearances and pronouncements. Yet dressed in his trademark navy blue blazer and white turtleneck, he was the model of success. The Yankees won 7 World Championships after his reign began in 1973. Steinbrenner's tenor of 37 years exceeded that of any other New York owner by 13 years. Colonel Jacob Rupert purchased the Yankees in January of 1915, and he was bought out in 1922. He purchased the team in 1915, and he maintained sole ownership of the club until his death in 1939. So I don't know whether that's 24 years, right?
Hold on for a minute. Let me give you just 2 times 3.
What do you mean 2 times 3? That's 10. That's 34 years. But wait a minute. Wait a minute. What do you mean 2 times 3?
Carry one. Yeah, 34.
Yeah, really? Thank you. I did that in my head, man. You got to learn how to do that in your head.
Are you kidding me, man? He got a plate in his head.
I got a plate in my head.
I don't care if you got a plate in your head. Figure it out. He appeared at the New York Yankee, at New Yankee Stadium, I should say, just 4 times for the opener in April 2009 for the first 2 games of last year's World Series and for this year's home opener when Captain Derek Jeter and manager Joe Girardi went to his suite and personally delivered his 7th World Series ring. He was very emotional, said Hal Steinbrenner, his father's successor, as managing general partner. Until the end, he demanded championships. He criticized Joe Torre during the 2007 playoffs. Then he let the popular manager leave after another loss in the opening round. The team responded last year, guess what, with another World Championship. At a press conference at Angel Stadium ahead of the All-Star game on Tuesday night, Yankee manager Joe Girardi, along with Alex Rodriguez, Andy Pettit, and Derek Jeter, reacted to the boss's death. It's a difficult time, said Girardi. On a great day for baseball, the All-Star game, everything everyone looks to, a great man of baseball has passed on. He's meant so much not only to the organization but to all of baseball. I could go on. Lots of other accolades. In 2009, the New York Yankees drew, get a load of this, 3,719,358 fans in their first season of play at Yankee Stadium, topping the American League in attendance for the 7th straight season. Currently, the Yankees remain the only franchise in baseball history to draw more than 4 million fans at home in 4 consecutive seasons, 2005 through 2008. Steinbrenner's death was the 2nd in 3 days to rock the Yankees. Bob Shepard, the team's revered public address announcer from 1951 to 2007, died on Sunday at the age of 99. And the Ohio-born executive leaves behind his wife of 54 years. 54 years he was married to his wife, Elizabeth Joan Zieg, and their 4 kids, Hal, Hank, Jessica, and Jennifer. Boy, there's something there, huh?
What?
He was married to his wife for 54 years.
That's a long time, man.
That's a hell of a great thing. 54 years. See, so that means he got married 50, 40, at the age of 36? What the hell am I saying? No, at the age of 26, if he's 80. George Steinbrenner of the New York Yankees. 877-876-PHIL. Now on to the more mundane as we continue on the show. Nicolas Cage talks about taking mushrooms. Wait till you hear this. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
What up, bud?
I don't know.
Welcome back to world famous Phil Hendry Show. We're trying to find out who owned the stinking Yankees, okay? We had the owners. We know George Steinbrenner's one of them. We know that Dan Topping, I don't know. CBS owned them. I think they bought them in 1964 and then they sold them to Steinbrenner. And I think before CBS, it was Dan Topping. And, those were some great Yankee teams in the 50s when Dan Topping owned them. I mean, what guy owned the Yankees? They didn't have good teams, you know?
Well, it says here a guy named Dan Topping owned them.
Yeah. What? Yeah, I know that.
Yeah. And George Steinbrenner.
Only those two, huh?
Yeah.
No, that's wrong, because CBS owned them, Jacob Rupert owned them, a whole bunch of other cats owned them.
Oh, yeah, that too, but Dan Topping is the guy. I like his name, because it reminds me of, like, dessert topping. But I'm a...
You give me that and let me see this. Boy, you are weird, man.
Yeah, I drew like a birthday cake.
Would you draw like a little birthday cake on Dan Topping's name?
Yeah, because of the topping.
877-876-PHIL.
What does that mean? Are you mocking me?
Yeah, I'm mocking you. Dan Topping. So what did you draw a little can of whipped cream? You are weird, man. Wee-hee-heard.
No, you're wee-hee-heard. Because you're asking me who owned the Yankees other than George Steinbrenner. Who care?
I care. Me. I. The host of the show. That's all you should care about if I care. Nicolas Cage tripped on shrooms with his cat. You might dig this story, bud.
Sounds pretty good.
Actor Nicolas Cage was a guest on The Late Show with David Letterman last night. And he was there to promote The Sorcerer's Apprentice, where he plays Master Sorcerer Balthazar Blake. In the film, he recruits a seemingly everyday guy in his mission to defend New York City from his arch nemesis. I know that we've got the Nicolas Cage performance here, or his appearance, rather, on The Late Show with David Letterman. Anyway, though the movie is geared toward children and teens, his guest spot with Letterman was geared certainly toward adults. Cage recounted a story about tripping on psychedelic mushrooms with his cat.
I do remember having a bag of mushrooms in my refrigerator. And I remember you mentioned your dog.
Yeah.
I had a cat, and my cat used to sneak into the refrigerator, and he would steal the mushrooms. And I said, no, and his name was Lewis. I said, Lewis, you can't do that. You can't do that. It's not right. He ate them voraciously. He just loved them. It was like catnip to him. So I thought, well, what the heck? I better do it with him. And I remember lying in my bed for hours, and Lewis was on the desk across from the bed for hours, staring at each other. Not moving. Occasionally he would go, meow. But he would stare at me, and I had no doubt that he was my brother.
So, I mean, he's going to get in trouble for that, don't you think?
What for?
Did he say that the cat ate the mushrooms, too?
Well, I don't know what he's talking about.
I think he did, man. Wait a minute.
But I do remember having a bag of mushrooms in my refrigerator. And I remember you mentioned your dog.
Yeah.
I had a cat, and my cat used to sneak into the refrigerator, and he would steal the mushrooms. And I said, no, and his name was Lewis. I said, Lewis, you can't do that. You can't do that. It's not right. He ate them voraciously. He just loved them. It was like catnip.
Oh, horse Bucky.
What?
His cat didn't trip on freaking mushrooms. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Mel Gibson allegedly uses, what are you looking at?
What do you mean? You're talking about the mushroom.
He's talking about psilocybin.
Oh, well, the cat can't eat that.
Cat's not going to eat that and live. Not that I think that they could. Mel Gibson allegedly uses... Boy, that's the one thing that I can't stand in this world. These stupid bastards that get their cat stoned.
It's funny.
No, it ain't funny. If I ever hear about you doing that, I'll beat your ass. You can be sure of that.
Why? It's funny to see him do that.
If I ever hear about you getting your cat stoned, I'll kick your ass. That is a promise from me to you. Anybody that does that to an animal, I don't care how funny they think it is, ought to have their ass beat. You understand?
Well, a cat doesn't mind.
You don't know what the cat minds, okay? It's a cat, man. It's not a human being. It's not like it's going to kick back and listen to, some hip-hop. It ain't going to kick back and listen to, you know... whoever, Andre 3000. You understand what I'm saying?
Just because I like to listen to that, I mean a cat does.
I don't care, even if the cat brings its own music. Mel Gibson allegedly used racial slur in third recording. No kidding. Boy, that shocks the hell out of me. A man believed to be Mel Gibson uses a racial slur and again lashes out at his ex-girlfriend in a third profanity-laced recording obtained and released by Radar Online. Now, that's interesting. They say a man believed to be. I think the last tapes, they said it was absolutely for sure him. On the new recording, Gibson, or at least the man believed to be Gibson, and a woman, I guess it's believed to be Oksana Grigoreva, argue that a Latina woman who argues about a Latina woman that works in their home. Mel Gibson and Oksana Grigoreva fight over an unnamed Latina employee of theirs.
But don't hire to come there, okay? You get that message?
Well, I'll pay her myself. I found her. She's my dentist's ex-babysitter.
I've been paying her. That's my money that she gets paid with. I'm her employer, not you. You found her. I'm her employer.
Fine, but if I need to use her, I will use her.
Because I will not pay her if you bring her to your house. I will fire her, and I will do it fast.
Okay, then I'll pay her, because I need her. She's good.
No! You're paying her with my money. It doesn't matter what you give her. It's my money. You understand? You don't have your own money. You're only using my money.
Here Gibson says this guy Gibson. You know what? The more I hear this guy, as much as I understand his rage, somebody ought to kick his ass. Here he talks about owning his girlfriend.
You made me moneyless. I used to have $100,000 a year when you met me. You took me. You possessed me. Everything I am, you owe me with my liver and my kidneys and my thoughts and my soul. Everything. My career or whatever it is. Pathetic career, whatever it is yours. You control me like marionette. I don't belong to myself, only to you. I can't do anything, and I walk on the eggshells always with you.
That's because you're a using whore. Now I own you.
At the end of the clip, Mel uses a slur describing the employee.
Do not use at your house. I have warned you. She will be fired if she goes to your house. You find that and you find some other money that's not mine. Okay?
No, I'm using A, B.
She's fired! Do you understand that?
Fine. She's fired.
Don't fire her! Because I won't pay her!
Okay, don't pay her.
And I will fire her!
That's okay.
Only works at my house!
Well, there's nothing to do at your house. Baby's here.
The baby should be here, and she should work at my house.
Baby is where I am. You're insane.
Be there for long. I will fire if she is at your house. I will make it known and fire her.
Fine.
I'll report her to the people that take money from the okay?
All right. Well, in any event, that's Mel Gibson. That's chapter 3 of that guy's careening life. When I say careening life, it's only because I know about his life because these tapes got released. Otherwise, it would be just something none of us would have heard about. It would just be some agony that he's going through, or more likely his girlfriend is going through. The agony he's putting the people around him through. Get some medication there, Mel. Serious. Get some medicine. Let this girl go. Let her have her babysitter. Let her have a damn house. Go take a vacation. Find a way to calm down, because, Jack, I don't give a damn how justified you feel in being as pissed off as you are. You're on your way to a booby hatch, friend, as sure as God made green apples, as my dear old father used to say. All right, coming up, 7 reasons that she agrees to have sex with you. I bet you didn't know why she was having sex with you. Well, we'll tell you why. Coming up here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show at 877-876-PHIL. Mel, stick around for this one. You're going to want to know this, too.
Phil Henry. It's the Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world famous Phil Henry Show, and online at philhenryshow.com. Right after the show, we post a show log, so you can see what we did on the show. And when you go to download our show, or when you're checking out all the other shows that we have in our archives, you can sort of correlate which show was about what, which one of our characters or guests we had on. And you can do that going all the way back in ancient time, man. Because, as I said, we've got shows going back 15 years and longer in different generations of our show at philhenryshow.com. Now, 7 reasons she has sex. Oh, I know. What was it you were saying?
Well, you're talking about why Mel Gibson is mad, and I'm just saying.
Well, thanks for belching on me too, man. God.
Yeah, no kidding, man. What is that? Garlic.
Ooh. God.
What?
It just stunk the room up with that belch.
Yeah, that is bad, man.
You know, it doesn't make any difference what you say about a belch. Mel Gibbon is, he's hurt and he feels bad.
Mel Gibbon is hurt and he feels bad. You know his name's Gibson.
I mean Gibson, yeah.
No, man, I told you, that is not a guy that's hurt.
Yeah, it is. You don't understand. He's sad about it. He's sad about losing his girlfriend.
Oh, that's not a guy that's sad. That's a guy that's angry. Robert, you agreed with me, right?
Yeah, I did agree with you, but now I changed my mind. I think you hurt, too.
Are you guys idiots or something? Are you listening to that guy? That is an angry guy. That's a guy that's got his claws out, man. He's ready to rip somebody's face off. He's ready to stick his thumbs into, go knuckle deep into the eye socket, just like in that movie 28 Weeks Later. Okay?
Yeah, but I know what you mean about that one and about going knuckle deep, but I think that he also is in love with her on account of she's hot.
He's in love with her on account of she's hot. He's Mel Gibson. He can have all kinds of hot women. I'm sure he was in love with her. Like he's probably been in love with every woman he's ever been with. But the fact is, this guy, I think he's scared.
Well, okay, why do you say that?
I think she's going to slap him with a palimony suit. Okay?
What's that?
A palimony suit is when you're not married to a woman, but she can prove that she gave up her career, she gave up her livelihood, she gave up her living in order to be your woman, which means she gave up her ability to earn a living so that you'd take care of her. Now, with your relationship going on the rocks, you can go to the court, she can go to the court.
Well, she can, I'm not.
I'm talking about the woman, yeah. She can go to the court, and of course I'm talking about the woman. She can go to the court and say, he owes me a living for the time that I gave up.
Yeah, but I mean, how long was she with her? How long was he with her?
I don't know. I think it wasn't that long, but you heard her. And here's the other thing that I think is really troubling. Mel Gibson sounds like an out-of-control jackball. Somebody needs to kick him square, kick him right between the you-know-what, and roll him down a hill. That much we know. But this chick is making this case for palimony right there on the tape. She's talking about how you did this, you did that. You know, you took my career from me. These tapes have been leaked by somebody. Who made the tapes? She did. So I think we have to assume that if they're getting leaked, she or an agent of this woman is leaking them to Radar Online. And I don't know whether or not Mel Gibson can walk into a courtroom with his attorney and say, you know, this whole thing is a load, Your Honor, because my client has been prejudiced with the public. He's been made to look like a raving lunatic. I mean, yes, he got angry, but those were privileged conversations. She violated the law by recording him without his knowledge. She makes this part of the public record. Now,
yeah, what about that on account of she broke the law and everything?
But you said it was a court case.
There is a court case. There's a court case, and I think we read it. It says that even if the tape recordings are made illegally, that is to say they were made without the knowledge of certain parties, if there is a compelling public interest, if there is a compelling right to know on the part of the public, then they can be made public and they are admissible in a court of law. Now, I might have that a little bit wrong, but I think the publication of those tapes, if there's a compelling public interest, is legal. Like in the case of Acorn, that was a compelling public interest. In the case of Mel Gibson and his girlfriend, though, I don't know.
Yeah, see, that's why I think he's going to be, like, he'll probably have a case, because nobody cares about Mel Gibbon.
Are you guys crazy? His name's Mel Gibson. What's with this Mel Gibbon?
You said it was Mel Gibbon. You said the other way was wrong.
No, I didn't. I never said that. I said his name is Mel Gibson. We called him Mel Gibbon on a bit that we did on the show.
Oh, Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson, yeah. So the fact is that this guy, it can cut both ways. But I think, first of all, I think she's setting him up for a palimony thing. I think that she, she's got a lot to answer for in terms of these tapes being leaked. The judge may say, well, you know, compelling public interest. I don't know. It sure as hell prejudices the living hell out of Mel Gibson. I don't know, in front of who, in front of how, in front of what, in front of where.
Didn't you say you know his lawyer or something like that or anything?
Yeah.
I had a dinner one night that I will not say with who, but at that dinner, I was with a bunch of people. And it was a dinner. It was attended probably about 20 people. And Blair Burke, who is a prominent Los Angeles attorney, was there. And I found out later on that she represented Mel Gibson in the drunk driving. Now, I don't know if she's his attorney in this case. One thing about Blair Burke, she's fantastic at keeping this stuff out of the press. She keeps it complete. I'll tell you who else she represented. Do you remember that case that Predator, you know, the guy that they do the tape recordings of those guys that are picking up little girls?
Yeah.
Okay. There was one of a doctor that got caught. This guy was a prominent Bay Area doctor, and he got nailed by this Predator thing. This Chris Matthews. Is that the guy's name? Who's the guy?
Chris Matthews. I thought he's a guy on NBC.
Who's that cat for? Chris Hansen. That doctor, yeah, it was Chris Hansen. That doctor that was caught on that Predator series, he retained Blair Burke as his attorney. Now, here's what's significant. Blair Burke is so smart. And after that doctor got caught on that Predator tape, they never did another new one. I don't think it was shortly thereafter that they stopped doing them.
Well, because on account of the stuff that they said.
Well, it was called To Catch a Predator. That's it. I'll tell you why. Because she said in one of the preliminary hearings, she made a very good point. She said, how do you know that this is the transcript of the conversation between the doctor and this supposed underage person? And they said, well, we're criminal justice or perverted justice. That was that company that NBC was working with?
Yeah.
And she said, that's nice. Who are you? Well, I mean, we kept the transcript. She said, well, that's, you know what? I don't believe you. I don't believe you. There's no reason why I should believe you. There is reason to believe that you prejudiced, that you transcribed that wrong or otherwise made that whole thing up because NBC wouldn't have a TV show if you didn't. And you guys would be out of work, wouldn't you? So you have a compelling interest to make that transcript look as juicy as possible so NBC will use it and use your services, perverted justice, in finding these predators. So what she did was she compromised and she brought into the open the, frankly, the compromised nature of what NBC was doing with criminal justice. While they're looking for predators, and that's all very well and good, and it's a very laudable thing, by the same token, you got to do it within the law. You can't make it look like you're setting people up. You can't make it certainly look like you're dumbing up evidence, that you're phoning up evidence. And if you got a company, oh, my name is Perverted Justice, and I can assure you that this is the transcript. Well, guess what? I don't believe you.
Yeah, but how come they believe on a cop and everything?
Cops are different. Cops are cops. Cops are accredited. Cops are an adjunct of the district attorney. And the district attorney is the official representative of the people of the state. Okay? So everything's got to be just copacetic, baby. Criminal justice is a private contractor, or perverted justice. I forget the name of this company. A private I'm not saying they did anything wrong. I'm saying that as a private contractor, I'm not going to walk, if I got a client and I walk into the courtroom with a client, well, who says? Perverted justice. And who the hell are they? Well, they're the guys that were listening to the tape. Well, isn't that nice? I'm glad to know that they were listening to the tape. Is there any reason to believe that those transcripts haven't been doctored or that you haven't monkeyed around with them or changed them? Well, why would we do that? Well, let's see. Because NBC would drop your ass if you guys didn't have an interesting case to present to them week in and week out. So it says here that Stephen Kolodny is handling Mel's current legal fight with Oksana. Probably because Blair Burke does a slightly different... She probably doesn't do family law, you know?
Yeah, it does drunks.
I don't know if drunks.
Is she in the Yellow Pages?
Who?
That Blair Burke.
No, she ain't in the Yellow Pages, you jackass. What do you mean she's in the Yellow Pages?
Well, you said she does drunk driving.
Not everybody that does drunk driving's in the Yellow Pages. Wow.
Yeah, what do you think, man?
Well, everyone I've seen.
You know what your problem is? You ought to go to that Jesus Christ bail bonds. What was that thing?
Yeah, what was that? That was the funniest thing I ever heard. Where was that?
Yeah, I found that online. It was a TV commercial called Jesus Christ Bail Bond. And a preacher, you know, I found out it was Mark Lamont Hill.
Oh, that's it. Mark Lamont Hill had that on Twitter. You should have seen. This is the funniest thing I ever saw in my life. These two cats, one of them's a preacher, and the other guy is whatever, I guess,
like he's assistant preacher.
Yeah, he's like the assistant preacher. Anyway, these two guys are on TV, and what are they pitching? Jesus Christ Bail Bonds. That's the name of the company. And they're, you know, if you're in jail, call Jesus Christ Bail Bonds.
Yeah, but they're doing like this, Jesus Christ Bail Bonds.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. They had some stupid pitch. All right. Weren't we going to do seven reasons she has sex with you? Here it is. Number one, the number one reason why a woman will have sex with you, why your girlfriend has sex with you, why you, above all other men, she wishes to be intimate with. Number one, your physical appearance turns her on. Yeah, sure. Meatheads may rule your gym, but in reality, women prefer muscle definition over muscle mass. According to a recent UCLA study, when 141 women evaluated photos of shirtless men, they ranked lean, athletic-looking bodies as more desirable than both bulky and skinny types. Study author David Frederick says that women perceive men with big mustaches as threatening and also know that it takes time to build all that brawn, time you might not spend with them. They're looking for signs of not only health and fitness, but also a potential commitment. Oh, this is chicks that already that don't know you yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, not your girlfriend. Your girlfriend go have sex with you on account of you a fat man.
Oh, is that why she...
Get out of here.
Number two, she thinks it's fun. A recent study in the Journal of Psychology found that women were 25% more likely to consider a man attractive if he had a good sense of humor and were 31% more likely to consider him a suitable mate. If she thinks you're fun outside the bed, she's more likely to have fun with you inside the bed. Number three, you're a good kisser. You're never too old for a steamy makeout session. In fact, a well-executed kiss could be your golden ticket to the main event. According to a recent study in the journal Evolutionary Psychology, women are far less likely than men to have sex with a bad kisser. Sounds easy enough, right? Not so fast, cowboy. Her definition of a stellar smooch may differ from yours. The researchers found that guys preferred wetter kisses with more tongue action than females did. You know, this is such a load, man. This is complete horse dung. And the reason why I say that, they ain't talking about me. And I'm not just saying that I'm typical of men. I'm saying if I'm different, there's got to be other guys that are different. I think guys will say stuff in a survey just to, because they're having a couple of laughs. I don't know how much of it is true.
You don't want to have a girl have a tongue in your mouth and everything?
What?
You're talking about, you retard.
I said, don't you want to have no tongue?
No, will you shut up, please? Don't you want to have no tongue?
Yeah, don't you like a tongue? The tongue kiss?
Not necessarily, no. No, I don't.
What do you mean, man?
Like the first time you kiss a girl, it's all... No, I'm not really all that nuts about it.
What do you mean? You talk about a girl kiss like that?
Look at Bud, someday when you're older, okay?
All right.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, number one, or excuse me, seven reasons. One, two, three, four. It seems like the natural next step in the relationship. You've wined her, you've dined her, and you've wooed her, but still no sex. The missing link? Commitment. It's key to sexual motivation in women of all ages, according to a recent study in the Journal of Mexican Medicine. And
what did you say?
I misspoke. I'm sorry. In the Journal of Sexual Medicine.
In the Journal of Mexican Medicine?
No, in the Journal of Sexual Medicine. Research has repeatedly shown that making personal disclosures signals investment in a relationship. In other words, sharing intimate details shows that you're emotionally fit in for the long haul, encouraging her to move forward physically. The next reason, she's in a romantic setting. You know the old cliche, whisk her away to an exotic location and you're sure to score. That's probably true, but not for the reasons you may think. It's less the destination and more the shared intimacy of otherness or of being outsiders that sets the mood, according to a 2005 study in the journal Fangoria. No, I'm kidding. Tourism Management?
This is bullcrap.
Give it to me. That's the magazine, Tourism Management. Next, you make her feel sexy. If she feels sexy around you, she will have sex with you. But one warning, first establish your compliment's safety zone. Listen to the things she says about herself. Watch the way she reacts when you touch certain areas, says Dr. Chris Fariello of the Council for Relationships. I can't, no guy named Fariello, I'm not taking any advice. And finally, she wants to please you. If you're striving for the big O, starting with the big C, communication. She may not have the sexual confidence to take charge, says Linda Banner. You need to let her know what turns you on. In a recent Boston College study, get out of here with this bullcrap. All this bullcrap about sex, man. how to have it, when not to have it, what to do. Have you ever heard more horse dung about something that ought to just come naturally? Has there ever been a manual? Have you ever read anything? Well, I don't even want to know about you guys, but I'm telling you, there's never been a manual that has been published about how to have sex that was ever worth a pinch of you-know-what.
Are you kidding? What about when they say how to, we're, you know, like a G-spot and stuff?
Don't worry about it, okay?
What do you mean?
Just don't worry about it. All this jazz about you want to look like a jackass, start worrying about stuff like that. She's going to wonder what the hell it is you're doing. She's going to get scared. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Coming up, a federal court strikes down an FCC indecency policy. Like there is such a thing. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, now let me play this Jesus Christ bail bonds. Here it is. Just so you know,
who is the first person to call when you get in trouble?
Jesus Christ bail bonds.
Jesus Christ bail bonds. If you're locked up in a frame,
bail out.
Bail out.
Bail out.
Bail out.
Bail out.
All right, that's so that you know that I'm not kidding.
That's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, man. What's that number again?
Get out of here. 10 toughest and easiest cities to find a job in. Dig this. So here are the 10 toughest cities to find a job, along with the number of people looking per every advertised job opening. Every advertised job opening, there's 12 people looking for the gig. So in St. Louis, Missouri, good luck finding a gig. Number 2, Detroit, Michigan. Good luck finding a gig there. Number 3, Miami, Florida. Number 4, Las Vegas. Number 5, Riverside, California. Number 6, Los Angeles, California. Number 7, Sacramento, California. Number 8, Portland, Oregon. Number 9, Memphis, Tennessee. And number 10, Providence, Rhode Island. Those are the toughest cities to find a gig in. The 10 easiest cities to find a job in. Washington, D.C. is the easiest city in America to find a gig in. San Jose is the second easiest. And the third easiest is New York City. Baltimore, Maryland is the 4th. Hartford is the 5th. Oklahoma City the 6th. You know, and a whole bunch of other towns you don't want to live in. So,
why'd you do that?
Because I don't want to read the rest of them. It's depressing the crap out of me. There you go, man. All right. Want to tell you that this is the 20th year of the Phil Hendry Show. At least our 20th birthday is coming up in August. So, visit our website to find out about different things that we may or may not be doing for our 20th birthday party, depending upon the, depending upon how we're feeling about things. You know, we may just go out and get blind, stinking drunk and get arrested, or we may have something a little bit more sedate and family oriented. We'll find out, okay? But check out our website, philhendryshow.com, for that information. As I said, we've got our show log that we'll be posting later on, and we'll have our download and, of course, our live streaming video of the show. Our Twitter account is RealPhilHendry. That's at twitter.com/RealPhilHendry and PhilHendryShow at twitter.com/PhilHendryShow. That's our staff one. And over at Facebook, facebook.com/PhilHendry. So those are the places to go in terms of the social media. Bud?
Well, I just was going to tell everybody if they want to email you, they got to do it on a website, too.
Well, yeah. So if you want to send me an email, send me the email over at the website. Just go to Backstage, click on that, and you'll say it'll say Email Phil. And if you got technical questions about your Backstage pass or anything like that, you got to go down to Contact Us, okay, at the bottom of the page. Phil Hendry Show, produced by Jason Rantz, Technical Director Charles Wagon, and I forget who was screening tonight. It wasn't the usual guy. Who was screening? John Wirick. Thanks, John.
Phil Hendry.